Well, hello and welcome to another Tyrrell's Classic Workshop. And the subject matter this week has been of interest to the community on the channel. We've taken a poll, actually. We've been a little bit mischievous. This car is slightly shrouded in mystery, so it's time to come clean. But 40% of people got it right. 25% was the next lot who thought it was a an original blower Bentley, and then it went on from there. So I can now officially declare, after thousands of people responded to the poll, that this is not an original blower Bentley, but it is an original, largely original, semi-original, partly original Bentley. Let me expand. This car is a Peterson Bentley replica, and it was made in 2005 for particularly bespokely for a customer, and it's a sort of homage, evocation, replica, whatever you want to call it, to an original blower Bentley. They made 50 4.5 litre supercharged Bentleys, which Henry Birkin basically was responsible for, and W.O. Bentley didn't like them because he was concerned about the lack of reliability by strapping a supercharger onto the 4.5 litre four-cylinder engine. Obviously, things have moved on since the 1920s when that happened, and with the benefit of modern technology, Peterson, down in Devon in England, have managed to make a business out of creating beautiful, working, vintage-esque Bentleys. So this car started life, it's still registered as a 1935 Bentley, which would make it a 3.5 litre. And by this time, Rolls-Royce had covertly bought the Bentley company, which was in trouble in 1931, dire trouble. Rolls-Royce bought it through a bridging company called Company Developments, so that Bentley didn't know, the sellers didn't know who they were. And Rolls-Royce, at a stroke, got the Bentley engine technology and wiped out one of their main rivals, just like that. So when Rolls-Royce absorbed Bentley in 1931, what they quite cleverly did was invent the silent sports car, as it was called, totally in contrast to what Bentley had originally done. And it was an adaptation of the, first of all, the Rolls-Royce 2025 horsepower chassis, which of course was sold as a chassis with the running gear and the bulkhead and then a bonnet, and then the coach builder put whatever bodywork the customer wanted on after that. And it was the same when with Bentleys. They had all coach built bodywork. This is a Le Mans replica, to be precise, a Vanden Plas Le Mans replica, more than likely. But so 1930s, Bentley was tamed down to become the silent sports car, which basically was a Rolls-Royce with a Bentley grille on the front. Bentley sort of fell into the doldrums, they became an also-ran, and that's for another video. But what this car is actually a Bentley 3.5 litre, which is a Rolls-Royce 2025 Bentley equivalent. It is not a silent sports car. This is back to the blood and thunder of the 1920s. The chassis is a 2025 chassis. It has been modified, it's been strengthened, as I'll explain a little later why. And it's got one of the interesting features of this is this bracing linkage here, which is basically like that, and then a straight arm with two vertical supports there, and the whole thing is under tension. And what it stops, it's like Bose notation, bridge construction design. It stops the chassis from flexing like that down. And it was, it's under tension. So the whole weight of the chassis at this bit is on that, and it keeps it all lovely and straight. I remember looking at the Rolls-Royce Silver Ghost AX201 some years ago, and before it was restored, the chassis had actually bent here and the bonnet was sloping up. I'm exaggerating now, but it wasn't straight until P&A Wood restored it so beautifully. But it can happen, the chassis can flex and bend. So that particular structure wasn't on the Derby Bentleys originally, but it was on the 1920s Bentleys. So they've replicated that. But the main big news is the engine. Again, we're digging into the Rolls-Royce parts bin largely here. What happened was in the 1940s, Rolls-Royce developed an engine, a series of engines called the B series. You had the B, it was a modular engine, very cleverly. It was the B40 was the four-cylinder engine, which was introduced in the Austin Champ, actually, a sort of Jeep Land Rover type equivalent. Wasn't a massive sales success, unfortunately. Austin built the Rolls-Royce engine under license. It was an extremely reliable engine. And then the B60 was used in the road cars, the Bentley Mark VI R-Type, S-Type, and we've covered an S-Type with the B60 engine in a video a while back. And then they did an eight-cylinder version called the B80, almost inevitably. And the B80 was used in military vehicles. Rolls-Royce took a punt, really, and made a load of these B80 engines, straight eight, which was just, it was a literally a B40 and B60 with extra cylinders on it. And this is, it's a lovely bit of kit, the B80 engine. It was very cleverly conceived, straight eight engine, very long, very thin, and in this case, very heavy because it's all cast iron, cylinder block, cylinder head, no thin wall casting, which Detroit brought in the 1960s to get the same weight reduction without resorting to aluminium blocks in their engines. This is the full shilling as regards strength and weight, and it's a very heavy bit of kit, the B80 engine, for that reason. But it's very sturdy. It was used in 18 Rolls-Royce cars only. Heads of state had 13 of them because Rolls-Royce were extremely picky about who they sold them to. So 13 of the Phantom Fours went to heads of state, and the other five went to very prominent private individuals or corporations. But that was the only time the B80 actually was used in a Rolls-Royce car. Most of them were made and crated up in a wooden crate and sent off to the armed forces in this country, in the UK, for use in military vehicles. Tank winches, minor armoured cars, etc. It works out at 6.5 litre. And what Peterson did, the creators of this car, was they actually bought ex-military, crated, unused B80 and B81 engines, a derivative, and actually fitted them into strengthened the Bentley 3.5 litre chassis up to take the 6.5 litre engine. It is a beautiful bit of kit. It really is. It's somewhere in the region of, well, it's north of 300 brake horsepower. But it's the torque. A 6.5 litre supercharged engine is always going to have lots of torque. And the reason why these engines were available in these crates is because Rolls-Royce made them for the military. A lot of them were designed to be run on liquid petroleum gas, which means they had larger ports, larger valves, were gas flowed, but they were also designed to be very low maintenance. Everything, the air filter, the oil filter, were both washable. So if the car was in the outer territory somewhere in the world, in Australia or in Africa somewhere, they could actually maintain the vehicle without having to fit new parts to it to a greater extent than normal. Clever stuff, really. So what Bob Peterson did was buy some B80 straight eight engines with that beautiful straight eight sound that Alpha HC2800s and things in the 1920s and 30s had, the racing cars, beautiful straight eight noise. And they put a supercharger on the front of it, directly coupled to the engine, specially made for Bob Peterson. And the result is, I mean, the attention to detail is fantastic on this vehicle. It really is. I've had the privilege of, in my 40 years doing this work, I've had the pleasure of working on several original WO Bentleys, 3 litre, red label short chassis, which was sort of the ultimate Bentley 3 litre, an 8 litre. I did some work on that. That was a fantastic thing. The owner and I got caught in a hailstorm while we were out road testing it, which was quite interesting. no weather equipment up or anything like that. So I've had some interesting experiences with the Pucker WO Bentleys. But the thing is, it's been brought up to date. It's a more slightly more modern alternative. You don't have it's as much old infrastructure to go wrong as you do modern infrastructure. It's been blended with the 1930s, 40s, 50s parts beautifully. It's quite a thing, this. It makes a lovely noise, that straight eight engine. The reason straight eight engines fell out of favor is because they worked while bonnets on cars were thin, with the front wings beyond that. They were long and thin, but then they went on to the V8 for various reasons. It's more compact, it's lighter, it'll do higher revs because the long eight-cylinder crankshaft whips quite badly. It can actually start to whip and go into self-destroy mode at higher revs because it's long and has lots happening on it, intermittent firing pulses, etc. So the V8 engine compacted everything, and then as cars started to develop, with the front fenders being the engine compartment being wider, with monocoque construction, unitary construction in the 1960s, the V8 fitted perfectly. So the straight eight had its day, but it's been rejuvenated in this car. And what a machine. Well, the front end of this car is one of its more imposing facets, and with good reason. I'm just going to do a little bit of an explanation about things here. It will be noticed by the more eagle-eyed amongst you that this grille is not shiny bright like chrome. There's a reason for that. It's nickel plating. It's not chrome plating. Chrome plating obviously has been around for a very long time. Any self-respecting chrome plater will triple electroplate, easy for me to say, copper, nickel, chromium. And the reason for that is that chromium is porous. And if water lands on it, rain or whatever, it goes through the chrome. And if the metal isn't plated beforehand, it will actually cause the rust to come up from underneath and damage the chrome. So hence the fact, copper, nickel, chromium. But decorative chrome wasn't actually used. There are two types of basic chromium. One is hard chrome for the likes of digger, the hydraulic rams on diggers, the big pistons that work the shovels or whatever. That's hard chrome. The other one is decorative chrome. And decorative chrome didn't come in until, I think, Duesenberg, people like that, Bentley were the first to use it, came in about 1928, 1929. Digging deep in my memory here. But I think so. And up to that point, it simply wasn't available. It wasn't invented as such. What Peterson have done, and I suspect this is something in consultation with the customer, they've opted for the nickel-plated radiator, which was the predecessor to decorative chrome. So even though this car has got decorative chrome bits on it, like the wheel spinners and other bits and pieces, it's quite sympathetic. Even the windscreen frame, I think, is nickel. It's quite interesting to see that this is sort of how it would have been. It's not over fancied by the onset of technology. So a nice little touch, nickel plated, and the P100, Lucas P100 headlights, beautiful things with these stone guards on them. The next thing to observe is this great big lump of aluminium here. It's a scroll type supercharger, screw type compressor, which draws the air in here through these big SU carburetors, which have been around forever and were actually used on the original blower Bentleys. It comes through here, gets compressed if the supercharger is working at that particular revs and load, and then takes it up to the induction system on the side of the engine here. It's probably an inlet length of about 5 or 6 feet, that, which is a lot for a mixture to travel through. But anyway, it works remarkably enough. And they've got these lovely horns, period horns, which sound absolutely fantastic. And again, a touch of realism. The 1930s, the lever arm shock absorber had been invented, which Bentley used along with a lot of other manufacturers. But in the 1920s, this was the technology. An André Hartford friction damper. So if you go over a bump, you've got the leaf spring here, which is the actual springing part, which is covered in this sheath, and it's because it's grease and it's filled with grease underneath to make sure that the leaves of the spring actually work against each other smoothly. This is to keep the moisture out. And then the friction damper is a series of friction discs which are preloaded by this nut here that's adjustable, and they actually, once the wheel has deflected, they stop it resonating and bouncing up and down. Simple but very, very workable concept. They were around for many a year until things got a bit more high tech. Hydraulic brakes all round from the later years. I'm not actually sure. I think, yeah, these do look like Darby Bentley braking system from 1935. But a lot going on here, and a lot. I mean, Peterson really, I have to say, they do a lovely job. They really do. There's a lot of it that is very similar to an original WO Bentley. But let's move around to the interior now. Well, this body was generally built by Vanden Plas. Mulliner did make some, but it's an ash-framed body that's covered by this vinyl material. It's just so cute. I mean, the thing is, there's hardly anything of it. Which means lightweight, of course. This is not going to be a light car with that great big engine in it, but this was the Le Mans style body, so Peterson obviously make it very faithful. It's got these cute little doors, absolutely sweet, for getting in and out. Very cute. So let's have a look at the dashboard. Well, another one of the delights of this car was a bit of a fad in the 1920s and 30s. I'pretty sure this was started by Ettore Bugatti on his cars, was the what's called an engine-turned or machine-turned dashboard. And it's got all this lovely, exquisite sort of figuring on. And this was, in the olden days, it was done by a cork in a drill that was put on the aluminium dashboard and moved along by hand, very accurately done. And Ettore Bugatti, a lot of his engines, a lot of dashboard work was done like that. Bentley actually revived this, to come to think of it, in the 1990s on the Continental T. They went for the engine turned dashboard, and it was very much in vogue in Bentleys in the 1920s as well. Hence, this is very in keeping. And again, Peterson have done a lovely job. They've got these very accurate looking instruments. And this car, because of one of the sort of beauties where it crosses over into modern usability, is the fact that once the engine's warm, it's even from cold, you just move the mixture, but it just starts and drives so easily. You've got the gear change down here, with synchromesh on every gear apart from first. Lovely action, really beautiful. And the handbrake outside here, all very satisfying to use. Huge steering wheel, no power steering. It's très facile, as they would say in France. It's very user friendly, or as user friendly as a replica of a Brute from the 1920s can be. So let's have a look at the engine now. Well, we're now going to open the bonnet, the hood, and there are no less than five individual fasteners to keep this from opening in the wrong place at the wrong time. So we're now just going to have a look at this and look at the gubbins, the business end. If it was a Rolls Royce, you'd have to swing the mascot through 90 degrees to stop the bonnet hitting the wings on the Spirit of Ecstasy. But on the Bentley, the Flying Lady, but on the Bentley you don't. And there it is, the beautiful straight eight engine. This is the feed pipe for the mixture coming up from the supercharger. These are the blow-off valves, and what a beautiful piece of kit. Really lovely. Big cooling fan, big radiator to keep it all cool. And yeah, there it is. We'll just fire it up, actually. just because we can. Oh, nearly. Try that again. One of the interesting things about this engine, because it is from a Rolls-Royce background, it's designed to be also very tame when it was used in the Phantom IV state limousines. And it will, if I can just get this right, if I can get everything set up properly here, we'll see how low the revs go before it actually decides to throw in the towel. That's 450 RPM. That's 400 RPM. How about that? How many engines do you know will tick over at 400 RPM? Incredible. Lovely. The essence of this car is that it is an up-to-date, it's like, is it the best of both worlds or is it a pastiche? Well, I'm very firmly in the first camp, but really you've got the best of both worlds. You've got a lovely old car that still looks for all the world like a, and has the feeling and the sensation and the experience of an original Bentley, but, at an absolute fraction of the original price. They're out of reach for a lot, even the vast majority of classic car collectors now, W.O. Bentleys. But this is it's just a lovely homage, a lovely tribute, very nice engineering job. Great thing for either going on long tours in or just going down to the pub on a Sunday afternoon. With three of your friends. Just a great thing, and it's been a pleasure to have this car in. It really has. It is essentially a modern car using old components. The identity is still a 1935 Bentley, but I think it would be really quite crass to do any sort of throwback to that blood and thunder period. You know, I don't want to appear woke or politically correct or anything like that, so we won't mention any of that. So, let's take the old girl for a blast, shall we? Tally-ho, chocks away. Well, to start this is much simpler than it would be for a period correct W.O. Bentley. Basically, you have these four controls, which are from the 1930s car, the 1930s running gear. You've got mixture, which is normal when the engine's warm. And you've got rich or start, when you're starting the engine cold in the morning, that is your choke, but that's the mixture control. When it's cold, it needs a rich mixture. This is your hand throttle, that's off completely, and that is on about 1500 RPM. And this would have been your ride hardness on the chassis. You actually had adjustable ride stiffness in the early 1930s. Incredible. And this one here was your ignition system to either advance or retard it. Henry Royce hated the expression advance and retard. He preferred before and after. Thank you very much. So we make sure it's in neutral. Turn the ignition on. Set the hand throttle. And there it is. Well, this is where it sort of becomes the best of both worlds, because this car has all the magic of a 1920s Bentley without a lot of the hassle. As I said earlier, you just switch it on and it comes to life. And you know, there's no messing about priming this or
actuating that. It's very, very simple. And the gearbox is one example. The original WO Bentleys had different types of gearbox, A-box, D-box, etc. And it was a crash gearbox, which means you have to know what you're doing to use it. There's no synchronized meshing of the gears, and you have to match engine revs, double D clutch, all that good stuff, which is either part of the fun or a bit of a faff, really, depending on where you're coming from. This, because it's got the original synchromesh Bentley gearbox, and you can hear there's no crunching of gears. I can change gear now, going from 2 to 3 effortlessly. I don't have to mess about with matching throttle or revs or anything like that. And yet, this feels every inch the 1920s British Bulldog, really. That straight eight engine, as I said earlier, straight eights were the preserve of racing teams in the 1920s. Lots of them had them, and they do have a unique exhaust sound. It is not like a V8. It's more melodic in a way, he says controversially. But this is bags of fun. It really is. It's sort of a cheat. It's having the vintage Bentley experience without the hassle. And it's very funny because I do remember the owner of the car, who has sadly passed away. I knew him for well over 20 years. He actually said when they drove to the likes of Monaco on a rally, he would actually, the public would walk past the genuine WO Bentleys, which of course are visually almost identical, and come and admire this one. That must have gone down well with people with their seven-figure cars. Yeah, just bags of fun. Great fun. And the funny thing is, you don't have to be going fast in this car to really enjoy it. You certainly feel the bumps, but on this road, that's highly possible. But I'm in second gear. I can't even remember where the speedo is. I'm doing a heady 30 miles an hour. And now that everything's warmed through, I can open it up on the straight, and let's see what that straight eight magic actually delivers. About 65 there, and I think it's fair to say he applies the brakes, which are almost as effective as throwing an anchor out the side of the car. It would certainly keep up with modern traffic, and you could give a few people a shock in this, but as you do with original Bentley 3.5s, you have to point and shoot with this car. It doesn't just follow the road itself, you have to guide it and be a bit like steering a ship. You want small inputs into the helm or the steering wheel, not massive ones, otherwise you tack your way along the road like that, which is no good. But it certainly gets interesting on this road at 60 miles an hour, I can tell you that. But that noise, oh, straight eights are just beautiful. We'll try that again. Wow. Certainly gets the adrenaline going. What a thing. What a thing. Absolutely amazing. Eminently enjoyable. And I have to take my hat off to anybody who drove one of these round the Brooklands racing circuit, the banking or whatever, over 100 miles an hour. Whew, for hours on end. Dear me, that's certainly one for the one for the bucket list, I would say, if you happen to be of a slightly insane disposition. But, oh, wonderful. Driving the car like this on a beautiful sunny day, it's just amazing. It really is. It's a handful, but in a way that brings its own reward. What a thing. The rev counter, of course, right in pride of place. We don't bother with such fripperies as the speedometer or anything else. And the other gauge that's worth looking at in this is the supercharger boost gauge. You've got bleed-off valves on the side of the inlet manifold, but when you actually open it up, the supercharge instantly boosts. Instead of having manifold vacuum like it has at the moment, we'll just get it on the straight. And being a supercharger, it's actually connected permanently to the engine, not like a Mercedes 500K or 380K, where you put your foot down and the compressor only engages at full throttle. This is permanently connected, so we'll just get that. There's the manifold vacuum. There it is. The supercharger boosting. Oh, gotta love this car. Not for the faint-hearted, I think is how, or the faint of disposition. This is a serious piece of machinery. Hypercar, in order to get this level of twitchiness, you'd have to be doing about 200 miles an hour. And here we are doing 60. Absolutely amazing. And the gearbox is just a delight to use. It's silky smooth. There's no hesitation, no obstruction. The gearbox is just fabulous. Dead easy to use. It's just got throttle response wherever you put your foot down. Peterson now say that they can get as much power out of a six-cylinder engine, if not more, which is obviously lighter, than they can out of this, but there's just something about that noise. He says, down changing to two. Malcolm had the car, he did lots of tours with the Bentley Drivers Club. He covered quite a lot of miles in it, tens of thousands of miles, I think. And that's commitment, to drive something like this, that distance. Even just driving it for 15 minutes down the road, I'm emotionally and physically drained. What a beautiful thing. And that's... this is amazing how tractable it is. We're down to 600 RPM there. And the car just pulls. Loads of torque from idle. Amazing.
Well, that concludes another Tyrrell's Classic Workshop video. Hope you've enjoyed it. Please remember to like and subscribe. It does make a difference, and we'll be back with something else very soon.